What's up, Leo?
What's up? What's up? What's up?
It's our second episode,
like,
man.
DJ Khaled, like, I think I have.
Oh, nice. You, I don't think that? We heard that. I don't think our audience is going to hear that.
Oh.
Well, at some point, we're going to, like, improve and have sounds and whatnot as soon as we gather a bigger follower cohort. Let's say it that way.
Because that's what you need when you get bigger. Sounds.
Yes, sounds. Always sounds.
Yeah. I see you're in the DeLorean.
You see my flux capacitor here?
Yes.
I got to fix it so I can get back to the future, man.
Yeah, I love it.
I actually saw the new Flash movie. And dude, that was, I really enjoyed it. Surprisingly, I really enjoyed it.
Really? It's for DC.
Yeah,
so it's DC. Better?
Yeah, DC are starting to come around. Like, you know, okay, they had lots of crappy movies, right? But then, obviously, they had the Batman series of, like, Dark Knight and all the stuff that Nolan did. And then they had all kinds of crap.
Yeah.
But then, all the rest. But Suicide Squad wasn't bad, you know. The new Batman. I think the first or the second one, was it?
The second one. The second one was really good.
Yeah.
The first one I didn't like. With William Smith, I didn't like it.
Yeah. It wasn't
the second
that
one was really good.
But what did come out of that was, what do you call it? The one with John Cena.
Yeah, that one. Suicide Squad.
No. Yeah, but there was a series.
The one he did, like, by himself. Yeah.
What's the name of it? I forget. Whatever. If anybody remembers, y'all can let us know. But it was a really good show. Search to Google.
Yeah.
And do we have it? But anyways, so the new Batman, also with what's his name? The vampire dude, was also not bad. And now this
one was really good.
Yeah, it was really good. And now this one, The Flash, was just so much fun, like lots of nostalgia and stuff. And like they did the whole multiverse thing of their own multiverse. So interesting. I don't want to give any spoilers, but I enjoyed it. Yep.
Go DC.
And I think go DC. Right. All right. So yeah, forget about like culture and movies right now. What we want to talk about today is
what chapter we are.
We are in chapter 17, I think. Episode 17. Boom. We got it. So this time we want to talk about CSS and the future of CSS, right?
Yes, please.
Some exciting things coming along, right?
Yeah. I was looking and it's like, it looks really promising. I mean, not more than promising. It's like these guys are really getting their stuff together, you know, and they're like really, really helping to build faster, because it felt for me at least that for a long time it was like stuck, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and now all these releases are like pushing this really, really, really forward. I mean, we really got used to use not the, you know, the
not using the platform, CSS. Right? Well, just text.
Yeah, and now they are like saying, you know what?
We got you.
Yeah, hold my beer.
Yeah. No, the CSS working group is doing amazing stuff. Like we already mentioned, CSS4 is actually a thing and going to be a thing, and we actually know that a lot of the stuff that kind of came out lately is part of CSS4, right? So layers, container queries, style queries, all those kind of stuff are coming down the pipeline. There is the Introp project, which is making all the browsers kind of implement all the latest new features of CSS. And such great things So let's get down and dirty and kind of check them out, right? So we have this list we kind of made preparing for this episode. kind of see what we can talk about and discuss. And the first thing we have on our bracket is layers, right? And CSS layers are now widely supported on all browsers, which is super cool. And the basic idea of it, as defined by MDN, is the layer CSS at rule is used to declare a cascade layer and can also be used to define the order of precedence in case of multiple cascade layers. And now for the layman terms translation, would you like to take it? Do you understand what that means?
It feels like it's like a group that I can define, and then I can, it's going to respect my that scope.
Kind of. It's namespacing, basically. You can give a name for like a layer of style sheet, which is, you can define just a style sheet that has like a, your resets, for example, and call it like at layer reset. And just have your styles inside. And then you can have a layer that's specific to like a component or a module if you want, and call it the component A and have that. And then you can write at layer and actually define by giving the names of those layers you define, you're actually deciding on the specificity and the order of the cascade. So the one that you want most precedent, you'd put it last, right? Just like the cascade works.
Wait, so it's kind of, I can import it like separately?
You could, yes.
That's awesome. So it kind of looks like a component, but without the component, only with the styling. It's like...
Kind of, yes. And you could mix it up with like with nesting, which is also almost completely supported in all of the browsers. So it's really powerful. A real use case that I could see for this is like if you're coming onto a project that might have like a massive big chunk of like legacy CSS, and then you want to kind of override it or start working around like newer styles. So you could like reset and then start over gradually just per like component or per page. Could be pretty useful.
What do you mean? You don't like important? Oh my god!
I have this. Like, I think it changes. Like, you don't need important with this anymore, right? Because you could take the style you don't want anymore, the style sheet, put around it a layer, and then just move the order of precedence to be like lesser than the one you want to have.
Yeah, sounds really cool. And actually, we joke about the important thing. It's like it's a nightmare, because when you have legacy code and there are like many, many, many importants, it's like so difficult. It's a code that it's really difficult to replace.
Right.
And this is a really cool use.
But I wonder how it works. Like, yeah, I wonder if.
Yes.
Please. Go ahead.
I think the use is going to be, because it sounds really simple, but I think it's going to be really used by many people.
I want to kind of run an experiment, and I wonder what happens if you have a rule that has important on it, but the precedence of the layer, the last layer, is higher. Do you think that'll work and kind of win over specificity for that one?
It's a good question. I think it should, because it's newer, and if they want to, but I don't think they want to break things. And, you know, important, it's like it's very specific. It's like
this
really, really high.
The
only way to step on important for me, I think it's the hack of the animation.
What's the hack of the animation?
Yeah, you can, with animation, you can be higher than important.
How so?
I don't know how, but if you create an animation and inside the animation, you're having the same class, that the important thing, it's going to be higher. It's a really interesting hack.
That is a hack I did not know of. but I'd like to see it. So I just kind
told
of
you about it years ago, like
probably could be like, you know, the amount of information that goes in out.
Yeah, and you said like, huh, interesting.
Yeah, could be. I have this code pen open, which I just kind of played around with layers, and I just checked out the whole important thing. So I have this, let me share my screen with you, but we'll also talk about it so our listener audience can kind of understand what we're talking about. So what I did is I defined three layers. So I have a main layer, a secondary layer, and a reset layer. But I also have like a general CSS unattached to layers. So what I did is I basically have a line that says layer starts with a reset. That is like the least precedent one. Then we have secondary and then main. And that's just because I played around with it. So the reset one obviously is the first one that takes into account, and all it does is just set the font family to some ugly Comic Sans. So everybody gets that. And then we have a secondary one that basically I have just a div with three paragraphs, nothing special. So the secondary layer actually colors all the P's as hot pink and gives an outline of some dotted red. And then we have the main one that is basically coloring the P in a different color and also coloring the first child of a P. If there is a first child, it colors it in purple. So what I did to kind of test it out is I played around with changing the order of the layers, but I also added an important rule on outline for the paragraph that is in the secondary layer. And the important does take precedence. It wins, even though the secondary rule is defined as the second thing, where main is the last one that should take precedence. So
yeah, so they don't want to break the internet.
Right. They don't want to break it. And important still kind of takes precedence and trumps all the rest. So then again, just don't use important. Try and structure your layers differently and don't use important. Try and use layers.
Yeah.
That way you won't
learn
break
specificity. It's the way.
Yep. It's the way. That is the way. That is what really... They teach it in Mandalore, no? The way.
Yeah, exactly. It's the way.
Cool. So our next one that we wanted to have a look at was container queries, right?
Oh, I was waiting for this for so long. This is so cool.
So what are you excited about, Leo? What excites you about container queries?
I'm so excited because media queries, we all know, media queries is the way of changing the styling when the whole, for example, width of a website or whatever, your browser or you know, in the mobile or desktop, whatever, it's a detection of a change of pixel density or width or height or whatever. But what I was thinking all the time is like, okay, why I can't control a specific container with this control? And now it's here. So you can have control of one container, and if you're like, the desktop is like getting smaller or whatever, or bigger, or the change, or, you know, change applications, and you use a mobile application or iPad
or just
or whatever.
Having two screens on your side, you just have different panes that you kind of move around and resize
and
on your desktop.
Perfect, because you can be so specific with your design decisions. You can actually...
You style components. You don't style like a page anymore.
Exactly. It's like, it's really good. It's like these things that give you specific control on a container, it's exactly what you want. It's exactly what you want. And that's why we use all kind of, CSS in JS, because we have that control with CSS in JS. But now with this, you have the control again with CSS, pure CSS.
Yep. And also, I know that Tailwind have implemented like container queries as a plugin and is available also, which is kind of cool. So all like the utility classes that help for like media and media queries are like, you could do the same thing with containers. So you can mark a parent as an add container and even give it a name. And then you can just have elements within that parent, just have an add small, add medium, and you can define those different sizes however you want, like you would in CSS.
That's awesome.
That is, it's so cool. Yeah, the basic idea is like, as soon as you resize your screen and the component changes or the element changes, then the styles of the children are affected by the parent size. It's just, I don't think that like the youngins understand how big this is and how hard this was.
Yeah.
Pre-media
what we career. Had to do in the past to actually do something like that. Yeah. Everything was a hack at a certain point. And now they are pushing forward and we're getting all these features. Oh, wait. So the syntax, it's like instead of media, like it's container.
Yeah, let's look at the syntax a little bit and talk about it. So I've opened up our the MDN web docs. And the basic syntax is you also have, instead of at media, you have at container. And you open parentheses and just say that the width is bigger or smaller from whatever you want to define. And then you open brackets and write your style definitions, basically. So you could... Yeah, very simple. And of course, you can use any kind of units you want. But there's also some other things that are to use, like container queries. You need to declare the containment context on an element so that the browser knows you might want to query dimensions of that container later. And then we have the container type, which you need to define for the container. So you have size, inline size, or normal. And the way it works, right? So the example that they show in MDN is just one div that holds another div that is a card and has just a title and a paragraph. And the main div that holds everything is just with a class post. And that post has a container type of inline size. And then within that, when the container, what they have here defined is if the container is larger than 700 pixels, so you mark that with at container, open a parentheses, have min width of 700 pixels, and then you have the styles inside. So then the H2, the title of it, will change the font size when the minimum width is of 700. So it starts off as like a 1M, like that's the general styling. And when the parent is bigger than 700 pixels, that'll change the font size to double that. That is
that's
pretty
awesome.
Cool.
In the past, it will break.
Yep. And also, you could name the containment contexts. So you could just add a property container name and just name your thing. Although we know how much we hate naming, but sometimes you have to, right?
Wait, but you can put the name in the container
yep.
sidebar. Okay.
Yep.
So it's the same.
What do you mean the same? It's not like media queries you can't name, right?
No.
So this is also kind of.
No, I mean it's the same to do the container name property or to do it like container name and then.
And then the rule. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's also obviously like everything in CSS, there's a short container syntax. Then you can have like stuff with slashes. So you can declare the containment context and the property in the same line. Very similar to kind of what we have in like when you define margins or now with the CSS grid. So you can define like your columns and everything in one line with the slashes that kind of separates it. Very exciting thing.
I'm going to use it for sure.
No doubt. That is one that I'm like going to use in my next little project that I'm kind of going to build probably. And yeah, container queries are the bomb. Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. So that is container queries for y'all. Next one we wanted to talk about was Subgrid. Now, I remember that I explained Subgrid to you and I kind of tried to show it. But the problem with Subgrid at this point is it only works on an experimental flag. Yep. Baseline is currently, it's not widely supported. It is only currently supported by something like Chrome Canary and under an experimental flag. So yeah, I just opened up Canary to kind of show it up. And we're looking at the MDN again. And what we have here is we have a box that we're looking at that that is a grid. And within it, it has an item that is also a grid. However, the grid template columns property for the child of the grid has the value of subgrid. And then it defines a grid template rows as 3 and 80 pixels. What this creates is actually another track. We have our grid here, right? So we're looking at the main grid. And the main grid has a track size of 9 columns, then has 4 rows. But then the subgrid item is only in the grid column between 2 to 7, meaning it only has 5. And the grid row is only 2 to 4. And then the grid template columns is a subgrid. So then the sub item itself actually sits on the track of the grandparent and only takes the 2 rows that are defined to him and kind of takes exactly like the intersection between the parent and the child. So basically it gives you massive control over what part of the grid you want to lay your child within or your grandchild within.
Okay. Let me, what was the way to do this before? To do like a grid inside a grid?
You can do a grid within a grid. However, the only problem with that is it doesn't respect the gutters and the parents like layout, right? So it'll be detached completely from the original column and rows.
Yeah, I get it. So now you have a grid with children. That those children have elements inside and they have the properties of the parent grid.
Yes.
That's awesome. Makes everything so much easier, especially for debugging.
Yeah. For debugging.
Because, before that, to debug a problem in a grid was a nightmare.
Yeah. Also, all of the browsers also added great debugging tools for CSS Grid. So now if you go into your dev tools, you could just mark an element that's a grid and click on it. So for example, in Chrome Canary, you could just, within your elements pane, you could see this little button that says grid. And when you click on it, it actually kind of shows you all the tracks of everything and the numbering of the columns and the rows, which is very helpful to understand.
Firefox got this for a long time. No one uses it. I don't use it. But because of the grid, many times I open Firefox only for debugging grid. So, and now Chrome was like, okay, let's do it. We're going to do it too. And you know, these things, it's incredible because in browsers, in the browser war, used to be a browser war, and I think it's over because they are like, let's do the same. Everyone likes the same things. We don't want to see different things in different browsers. We hate that.
We do hate that, but still, like nowadays, it's still Safari is like the new IE, although they have been making strides to get better. But there's still a lot of funky stuff that happens with Safari, right?
Yeah. No, Safari, it's always going to be, I think Safari, it's the Internet Explorer now. They became
that's the what new I said, Internet man.
Explorer. All the problems specifically in CSS, it's like very difficult. JavaScript, not so much. It's fine. But CSS, they're always behind.
Yeah. Okay. So how about you take over the screen and share the next point, Leo?
Yeah.
What do we have next? Next on our list.
Oh, my favorite. I know why.
Yes. That is the one that you were super excited.
Balance. Oh, my God.
Go ahead and explain to our listeners what that means.
Yeah. It's really easy to explain with the. Let me share the screen. Yes. I'm going to share my screen.
Mm-hmm.
Can you see my screen?
I can see your screen.
Awesome. So before TextWrap Balance, we used to write paragraphs, and the paragraph, it's taking the whole length of the container. Mm-hmm. So it's, and if you center the text, you know, center, the text could be broken with one word in the end, or maybe even worse. And it looks really ugly. But with the TextWrap Balance, it's going to rethink the whole paragraph to make it look perfect. And I know balance. It sounds simple, but it's like, it's so cool because we used to, you know, fight with each paragraph with the margin. And we're trying to, one pixel, no, 2 pixels, and playing with each one. To make it look good.
Or add BRs after words to have the line break at the right place.
Exactly. And that was like our nightmare. And imagine that it's a text that needs to be, you know, elastic. It needs to be, you know, fluid. So this is going to fix it. That it doesn't matter in what container it's going to be. It's always going to be perfect. It's so good. This feature, mwah.
Yeah, I love it. So simple, so like one line, and it solves such a slew of problems, right?
Yeah.
And all it needs, you add TextWrap Balance.
Yeah, and that's why what I'm saying that this is genius, and this is, we need more things like this. It's one line. It's one line, and it's saving a lot of time and headaches. Well done. Let's go for the next one. I don't know if this is the next one. I'm looking for, because of the time, I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, we wanted to discuss the next one. So it's okay. Let's skip to that one. These are all the viewport units, basically, is the one that you're looking at, right?
Yeah. And this one is important because, you know that many browsers are different. Some have this bottom part with some buttons, you know, of next, home, whatever. And you have the other browsers that they don't have nothing. And when we used to use VH to actually get the full height of the viewport. It wasn't the same for all the browsers. And when we have some dynamic content, it was getting, you know, like a little jump when you jump between pages.
Yeah.
It was because it was rethinking that bottom part. And it was, you know, it's like little pains that we had to solve all the time. And this thing, it's like, it's going to rethink the full height, no matter what it's going to be in the bottom. which is great. You have
So basically it's different sizes that are more targeted at mobile devices that might have extra spacing or funny business with the bottom drawer and toolbar and like the URL bar.
Yeah, here's like a good example. You see, because when you use VH in the past, these browsers, each one was taking a different height.
Right, and VH is view height, but the height of the thing was not exactly the same. That is the idea.
Exactly.
And I had many times that like I used 100 VH to kind of cover the whole thing. And then the designer comes and says, oh, no, but on my iPhone, it's not exactly in the center because the URL bar is pushing it down. And no, so maybe do it and calculate it and take off a little pixels here.
And then we needed to do it specific, you know, to do some media queries specific for the device. Remember?
Right. And then again, it was for the device, but not really the device, but for a screen of that size that doesn't pixel necessarily.
Yeah. And then the CEO comes to you, is like, I have this, I'm using this Android. And it's like an Android, like really old phone. You're like, dude, you're the CEO. You should have a new phone.
No, and, if he's the CEO of a startup, he should have an old phone, man. He should be skimping.
Yeah, oh my God. And this is great because you can target actually specific browsers and phones only because of if you know. You don't need to know, which phone is. You have now SVH and LVH, so you can target all.
What does it stand for? Do you have that
the S
right in front of you?
Small.
Yeah.
The L large.
It's for S. I didn't read it. Like, I know that they exist. Small. I didn't check like small, large, and medium, basically.
Yeah. Which is perfect. It's we need to understand this, so it's great. It's also really well done, and I don't widely support, so it's not supported by all of them. But yeah, you can see Chrome, Edge, Firefox, and Safari, which is good enough for the beginning.
Yeah, the main ones.
You know, mobile
use.
For mobile, actually, it's like pretty good. Actually, you know that in the iPhone, you don't really have other browsers. They're all Safari. This is insane.
I know this. It's everything is a wrapper for Safari. They don't actually let you run Chromium on an iPhone.
So stupid. Apple, come on. Please stop it. Stop.
Yeah, I know Dan Shapiro has been kind of trying to champion this and saying like we should completely boycott Apple until they let us use Chromium browsers on an iPad.
We should. Come on. Steve Jobs is not here anymore. And I know Apple many changes now. So come on.
Dude, I have an Android. You're the one with an Apple now.
Yeah.
You got an iPhone.
Here it's easier. Yeah.
Take that blue bubble away from me.
I actually have two phones, so it's okay. Okay,
that I don't get at all, but that's a conversation for another time.
That I have two phones? Yeah, we'll explain it later.
Some other time, right?
Yeah.
Okay, another cool little feature coming to CSS is the color function. And you
color
being
function, like we used to have in SAS,
mm-hmm.
It's the same. I'm asking, I really don't know.
Honestly, I thought this was more your jam because you being more of a CSS veteran and also have a keen eye for design and colors.
Yeah, but this function, so let me read. The color function notation allows a color to be specified in a particular specified color space rather than the implicit sRGB color space that most of the other color functions operate in. Support for a particular color space can be detected with the color gamut CSS media feature. So we have the color function.
Mm-hmm.
with.
So basically, it sounds like there's just more values for the colors, and then you have a wider range of the spectrum. Am I getting that right?
I think so. What we have, because I know that there's the accent color and we have the color mix later. So color mix is different. So I'm trying to understand what's the difference between color and color mix. Because if I have a color and, oh, I get it. I can see it here. Instead of having
Can you pop up your screen so I can see what you're seeing? I'm kind of having a hard time reading this a little bit.
What do you want?
And just zoom in and zoom in your browser.
Ah, sure.
Command plus that shit. Yes.
Yeah. That's it.
A little bit more. Yes. Now I can see it. Okay.
So it's like exactly what you have with the sRGB, that you have the opacity in the end. Look, you can add with the color, you can add like other, you know, that like a difference in the color, but you can do it with any color. You don't need to, you know, in the past we used to, the only way to add opacity to a color was with the sRGB because it was the only one who have a fourth property. So you can add the opacity in the end. So now with color, you can do with any color. So it's exactly the same function with SAS. It's exactly the same.
Nice. So
another thing, it's really, really useful and many, many, many people use it. So now you can use it with CSS. It's about time.
Yeah. And I think that gives us a good segue to our next interesting property, which is CSS nesting, which is something that also kind of one of the key features for SAS and less that a lot of people really liked, right? Mm-hmm. Is just the idea that you can nest now. You can just have a selector and then have another selector within that selector. That means it's like having the descendant selector, which is the caret, right?
Now, this one's long waited. And I wonder if the browsers, they have actually already, they are supporting this. Because, when you see in the right part, you don't see nesting. You see only one property, and then you see the other property. They're like separated.
Yeah,
but now that CSS, it's like supporting the nesting. So probably you're going to see it in the CSS window.
Yeah, and let's see. So I just opened up Can I Use, and it seems that it has a global support rate of 72%. So Chrome from version 112, it started supporting it. Edge, of course, the same. Safari only in 16.5 started supporting it, which is around just May this year. So then again, you know, that doesn't mean to go. Firefox is late to the game, only going to support it in 117, which was just released. Opera supports it and has supported it for a while now. But all kinds of like Opera Mobile and like old Android browsers don't support it, and Firefox for Android. So it still has some way to come, but
72 is not that.
No, I wouldn't go and push it to production tomorrow.
Yeah.
Let's say it that way.
You have a rule for a percentage?
Well, I used to have a rule when I worked on products, when I was building products, but now with my job nowadays that I do demos and stuff, I would just
I'll just use it because
it's fun and looks good and makes sense.
Yeah.
But it depends on the users and your requirements, but I'd probably not use something unless it was 90% at least. That's my rule of thumb, like makes sense to me, right? Because you do want to support as many users as you want as you can, and as soon as like their browsers don't support it, you have to have a fallback, and then there's this whole thing of how do you deal with that. So you have to write the styles twice, and not so fun, right?
No. Yep.
So better have like progressive enhancement than graceful degradation, right?
Yeah, completely.
All right, so, cool.
Very cool. I was waiting for this one for so long. I mean, nesting, it's like so old in since, you know, with SAS version 1, it was incredible. Yeah. So many years waiting for it.
Whoa. And the next one on our list is scroll-driven animations. And scroll-driven animations are a thing that have been used as scroll-driven animations with JavaScript. But the only thing now is the scroll-driven animations is going to get better support and less boilerplate for JavaScript. And the animations themselves can be written into CSS, which is a great thing. So I just opened up a little demo here that kind of shows what can it do. And you can see what we're looking at is basically a web page that as we scroll, we have all kinds of different animations that are all tied to the scroll position of my nav bar. So as soon as you scroll up and down, we have elements popping in and out, and it's super cool. And it's not laggy or anything.
We used to do this with libraries. So now that we have support, I mean, this one is going to be in the beginning for, it's going to be like basic support, but you know, it's great because you can save all that size that you're bringing all those libraries, and now you can save all the size, all the library size. And,
And it's going to have all kinds of properties. So you have the animation timeline, animation range start, when it ends, defining the named scroll progress timelines. So you have a property that is actually like the scroll timeline and the timeline axis, and you can name it and you can view the timeline. You can define the named view progress timelines and modify the timeline scope. Really, really cool. Again, not something that is yet to be widely supported, so I wouldn't spend my time digging into it too long. It's just cool to know that it's coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, Apple will be really, really thankful. all the sites that Apple build are with these kind of animations.
Yeah,
probably they're not gonna use.
Probably not. But the next one we wanted to discuss was the View Transitions API. And View Transition API, I think, is really another cool one this is a game changer, in my opinion. It's currently only supported in Chromium browsers, not supported in Firefox or Safari. So again, I wouldn't invest a lot of time in it, but the demos I've seen with this one are really good. The basics of it, it's going to allow changing the DOM in a single step while creating an animated transition between like the two states. So you're going to have kind of a spa feeling for multi-page application. So you're going to have, just for any website, you could add this when you're transitioning between pages, which is really, really, really cool.
Between routes.
Yep. Between routes and so URLs, cool, basically. Man.
I see these kind of animations, it's always wow to me. It's like really great. And it's like enhanced like the UI so much. And right now there are like many libraries that are doing this. But again, it's a lot of, you know.
A lot of code. You got to write code. You're not defining the animation within the CSS. And this is going to kind of allow you to make the update only through mostly CSS. You're still going to need to attach a listener of JavaScript to kind of understand if you're starting a transition between a page or an element, just so you can notify the browser, okay, kick this in. Yeah. But then again, it's very low key.
Like 4 lines, right?
Yeah, about something like that. So that one is really, really exciting. Cool. And we talked about the color function, but we also wanted to discuss accent color, which we haven't yet discussed, which the accent color property is basically a way to style the things that were unstylable before. You had to hack around and kind of find a way to cover something and then change it and move it around. So now, like, for example, input checkboxes were almost unstyleable. You had to hide the checkbox and then put an image or something, and then also handle the state for when it's checked, change it to an SVG or some other image or stuff like that. But now you have it.
Yeah, a nightmare.
Yeah, it was a nightmare. And now you have just an accent color. So you put on this an input type checkbox. You basically just fit accent color, something else, and it changes the color of that input box.
Let's show it.
Yeah.
It's here, right?
Yep.
So it's so simple. I want to try.
Yeah, you can select the accent color is red. And if you go and you uncheck the checkbox, and also like the accent of the box itself, when you hover, I think you can also control it. If I'm not mistaken, no. In this demo, it doesn't. But it's still really, really simple. Really, really something cool that is going to make our lives so much easier.
Okay, what is this color was usually in the shadow dome, right? In the past. So what they did was to actually expose the color from the shadow dome to the regular dome.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it.
Yeah, so I just checked support for it, and this is at a 90.58% support rate.
Oh, yeah.
So this one is definitely one you can start using nowadays.
Right now. Which
is pretty nifty. Yeah.
Super cool. Super
very, very nice. What else do we have? We have
the mix.
Color mix. This one is for you again. Like I'm not sure I got it. I'm guessing this is like mix-ins also in SAS.
Color mix is like exactly what you are doing with SAS for a long time. It's exactly the same function. It's like imagine that you want a color mix between colors that you already have and maybe colors that you don't know because you are getting them from an input. Maybe you're getting from the user. So you don't know the colors and you don't know what you're going to get in the end, but you have this color mix function and you can have colors or you can have actually percentages. You can have variables. It's so cool. And then you add the colors and then you get the mix of them. Really simple.
Could you use this to make a gradient?
A gradient.
It would make sense that maybe this is a way to kind of mix your, if you have like three brand colors and then you mix those to kind of see what the gradient you want between like the transition of them, that could be a use case for that.
Maybe I'm trying to see. Usually it's like in SAS, you don't do a gradient with them.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting something like a color with opacity. But
right. So this is a way to kind of
have the gradient function.
Yeah. So this is just to make a spectrum of a color, yeah. Like, and have the different shades of it.
Yeah. With opacity.
With opacity. Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Really nice.
Cool.
And I see last one, the CSS value functions.
Yeah.
I never look at this.
So the CSS value function is, let's read what it tells us. The value functions are a statement that invokes special data processing the calculations to form a CSS value for CSS properly. CSS value functions represent more complex data types, and they may take some input arguments to calculate the return value. So this is the counter one, and the transition single properties. Is this the one we're talking about?
If I understand, it's like you have a property, a function inside the property with a variable that you don't know yet and you need to solve with the function.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like props. It looks like the props function, right?
Somewhat. No, but this is, okay. So now I see. So this is what we call CSS value functions are all the stuff that we use to kind of animate stuff and change and calculate within CSS. So the calc is considered to be a CSS value function. And what we have that is coming around is new functions that are like round, that are going to calculate the rounded number based on a rounding strategy, mod, rem, the trigonometric functions, sinus, cosine, its tangents.
So if you want to do
all kinds of shapes.
Yeah. So cool. Because you can do all kinds of calculations inside CSS.
Without the need of JavaScript. Yep.
Oh my God.
So stuff that goes into this bucket is like the blur function. So it can create a blur on an image, and you have the brightness and function, contrast. Drop shadow is one of these filter functions. Invert, opacity is considered to be one. And then you have the ones for colors, some that we discussed before, which is RGB, SSL. All of these are in the same bucket of value functions. And the same as gradient functions.
So cool.
Yeah. So this is basically just a bucket, I think. Before this, right, we knew this. We knew like the specific names of those functions. Just, I don't think I've ever referred to them as value functions. And now they have a few more that they're adding. So they're going to also add image, I see, which is experimental. It's going to define an image similarly to the fashion of the URL function. But it's going to include specifying the image directionally and fallback images when the preferred image is not supported. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Here, regarding the gradient, you have the linear gradient, radial gradient,
gradient,
many, many functions for gradient.
Right. So this is also for the animation. So the scroll animation, that's actually going to be, it's part of this bucket of functions. So scroll is going to be a function that's going to help to set the animation timeline for your animation for the CSS scroll animations, and also the view and anonymous view progress timeline. So yeah, this is kind of the bucket that powers all the stuff.
Wow. I'm going to go through this list. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a big list.
Yeah. But it's great because, you know, if you have the calculations with the CSS, I wonder how much calculation you can save on JavaScript.
Right.
That could be like life-changing if it's done well.
Right. And think about, you're not going to have to not do like shit within React and map over a list and then have the index and also use the index to put in something to calculate what is the padding for the next thing or whatnot.
Yeah, that could be the life change.
Could be.
It's like a saving of code and also calculation.
Cool. And yeah, I think we went over our bucket list of things that we're excited about. And yeah, this is the future of CSS, and it's super exciting.
Looks really promising.
It's really promising. It makes your life easier. And yeah, totally. CSS is a programming language.
Yeah, and I hope that the meme with the Family Guy dude, it's going to be a thing in the past.
Yeah, we need to make a new meme for like the newfound CSS.
Yeah, no, but it really looks really promising and good, and many developers are going to do like really cool stuff with it.
Cool. So I think it's about time to wrap it up. And for listeners and maybe viewers, we're going to try and put this episode on YouTube and kind of see as an experiment if you like it or not, and if people view. And we'd love to know what you think. Drop us a line, hit us up on Twitter, whatever. If you like this, share it with your friends. And yeah, keep coding.
Twitter
keep
and cool. Threads.
And Threads. And Mastodon and Blue Sky.
Yeah.
And where, all the rest. Where. And Snapchat and Signal and Telegram.
Yeah.
All right. So for that and for us, have a good time. Great talking to you,
Leo. See you, buddy.
See ya.
Bye bye.